Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's visit with 94-year-old Chester Ski Bernacki of Jamestown, California, originally from New Bedford, Massachusetts. But on December 7th, 1941, he was on the light cruiser USS Helena at Pearl Harbor. We heard him describe the explosion he felt from within his 5-inch 38 gun mount when the Helena was struck with a torpedo that morning. And when we left off, he was out on the deck helping to clean things up after the first wave of Japanese planes had come and gone. But I'm guessing you guys had no idea whether or not there were more on the way.
Yeah, we didn't know that, but like I say, when I went outside to throw those casings and to clear the decks, I looked over toward Battleship Row, and all you could see was this smoke and the mortar launches and tugs running around picking up survivors and stuff. It was off in the distance,
right?
You know, but you could just see turmoil, black smoke rising. And at the time, if I remember right, when I looked over there, I thought I saw the Oklahoma capsizing. So then all of a sudden, here we come again, back in the mount, started shooting again.
So you're a 19-year-old kid. You come up to the top of your ship in this paradise that you've been enjoying for a while.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And this is what you see. How mind-blowing was that to look at that?
I don't know how to explain it. What the heck's going on? You know, even right now, I can't imagine how I felt.
Was it, I guess, opposite ends of that spectrum would be, on one hand, it could be a punch to the gut that makes you really emotional, and on the other hand, just so shocking that you're almost numb to it and you don't even know what's going on. Was it somewhere in between that?
Even right now, I can remember a lot of stuff that happened, you know, looking over this way and seeing this happen and that happened. I remember after the attack, more or less, I looked over to my right, and there was a smokestack there that we had a shot a hole through it and knocked an airplane down on the other side. And this guy, Wally Wallings, was in that tower, and I think he said something about, what the heck are you guys doing shooting at? Because it's pretty close to that stack, you know,
yeah.
From what I heard, you know.
And again, you have no idea what you're shooting at, because all you're doing personally is stuffing the shells
in. I'm putting those projectiles in and going as fast as I could.
Maybe this is an obvious question or a dumb question, but that probably has to get pretty exhausting after a while, because those are 60-pound shells that you're picking up and dropping in.
You don't even notice it. When you're doing something that you can do it, baby. I used to be in pretty good shape there.
Yeah, that's a good-looking sailor over there on the wall there. I'll take a picture of that and put it at hometownheroesradio.com. And the sailor you just mentioned, Wally Walling, was just on this show and told that story from his perspective, and I think he's forgiven you for trying to shoot him in the tower.
I hope so.
You guys will see each other at Pearl Harbor for the 75th anniversary, hopefully.
I hope that happens to it. I hope old Chase is with us.
Yeah, Chase Anderson wrote stories on both of these gentlemen for Friends and Neighbors magazine. I have that linked at hometownheroesradio.com, too. So you get out there on the deck, you got to clean up, but you're looking around and you see just devastation everywhere. And you probably have no idea who did it, right?
Oh, yeah. They let us know right off the bat.
They told you.
Oh, yeah.
So you knew it was the Japanese and this is war.
Oh, man, I'll tell you. After the attack and them guys went over to get burned and stuff, you could smell the flesh from the at the hospital when the wind changed and blew over the harbor.
What about when the second wave of planes came in?
All I remember is we just kept shooting. You don't think about what's happening. You're just doing it. You've had so much training, I guess. And then after the battle was over and the whole bit like that, everybody was trigger happy. They sent us sandwiches to eat. We kept everything manned. That night there was supposed to be some planes or something coming in, which a lot of people didn't know about.
You mean American planes?
Yeah, American planes. And everybody was trigger happy, so they had these machine gun mounts on top of buildings and all, and all you could hear is every once in a while somebody would test, you know, da 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 da. Then at the end of the harbor, you hear the same thing. Da-da-da-da-da. When the planes came in that night, somebody opened up a little too long, so the other guy took over and they just kept shooting until I heard they knocked down five of the planes.
Well, and you can understand what you describe as being trigger happy. I mean, because you guys have no idea what to expect now. The world has changed in a day, and I'm sure you heard and probably wondered, are the Japanese coming here? Is this going to be an invasion? What's going to happen next? Yeah. Do you remember wondering what was going to happen?
Honestly, I can't remember. I can't remember how I felt about it. All I know is I knew Charlie saw if he got injured. Because when the flare of the torpedo went up through the ventilation system, it come out through the exhaust, which was over the top of the quarterdeck, and I understand he got burned and he ended up in the hospital. That was the last time I saw Charlie.
See, he's one of your good buddies, and you find out he's been burned from head to toe.
Yeah, and like I say, he ended up in the hospital. I never heard from about him after that.
Here you are. This has all happened. You know your ship is damaged. You know people have died. And one of your best buddies is burned so bad it burned all the clothes off of him.
Yeah, just give you a shirt, yeah.
What did that do to you, to know and see things like that?
Well, see, I didn't see that, but I heard about what happened to Charlie.
Yeah.
That he got burned, and the guys that did get burned, to start out with, we used to have inspections, right? They wore a full uniform, whites. And then Eleanor Roosevelt come over before Pearl Harbor, and had everybody send in 3 sets of whites and cut them down to where they looked like the Bermudas, you know, the shorts. And that was a bad thing because when the guys got burned and stuff like that, the skin was exposed.
Yeah.
I can remember the first inspection, 2 ranks facing forward, and then the front rank about facing, and then they have the inspection, you know. So as soon as that first rank did an about face, and we were facing one another. Everybody looked at their faces first, and then they went down. Everybody had big tans, and they got down to the legs. They were white. Some of them were like toothpicks. But like I say, that exposure of the skin was a big thing on them burned guys. Wherever the thickness was on a skivvy shirt, it was less burned. Than, you know.
So there are guys that are burned. There are guys that are hit by projectiles, the shrapnel, and as I read in Chase's article, you saw a guy who was hurt pretty severely on one of the gun mounts, right?
What happened is one of the guys, he was in a turret 2, and in order to get into turret 2, which was higher than the turret 1, mm-hmm. you had to climb up a ladder to get up inside the turret. Mm-hmm. As he was reaching up into the ladder to climb up, some kind of fragment or something hit that barbette and hit him in the chest and tore his arm off. So they put him on the beach. And then when we had the canvas out there, we took the awnings down, he was inside one of those awnings.
With his whole arm blown off.
Yeah, dead in a doornail.
And you saw that?
Yeah, that's the only time I ever saw anything like that that was real bad, except when I was in Guam and it's all the Japanese dead bodies and stuff and whatnot.
So seeing all of this, is that something that makes you angry? Are you just sad? How would you describe the emotions that stirred up in you?
I don't know how it affected me, honestly. Like I say, I guess I was going into what they call that post-traumatic deal. Because I got to where I just didn't give a rat's butt, you know, about anything. I just did what I thought I was supposed to be doing.
What about the days and weeks that followed the attack? What were you guys doing?
Well, what happened after the attack, and we were able to, they put us in the dry dock, and they patched the hole in the hull, and then we went back to Vallejo, and they took all the machine guns off, and they put 1.1s on, and then 40 millimeters. When we were well enough that they thought that we were able to go out, we stopped in Pearl, and on our way to Guadalcanal, the South Pacific. We met up with a ship from the East Coast, I think it was the Brazil. We were escorting, I think, the Long Island escort carrier with reinforcements of fighter planes, F-4Us for the Marines on Guadalcanal. And we got there just right after the first battle of Guadalcanal, where the Quincy Vincennes, Astoria, and the Canberra were sunk.
Uh-huh.
We had an advanced base called Espirito Santo. We went down there, and then we operated out of there, in and out. The next thing that I can remember is September the 15th, we were operating with the Wasp. She got hit. It was on a payday, September the 15th.
1942,
yeah.
And this is another one of the great tragedies of World War II. Yeah. What happened to the USS Wasp?
Well, she got torpedoed. We were one of the escorts in the group, and we circled and circled, and the guys went over the side, and some of them guys went over the side being payday. When they dropped the charges, you look over the side, and you could see money rolling around.
Huh.
I remember that because we went outside. You didn't use the 6-inch battery. You could use 5-inch battery for surface fire to disrupt, say, a torpedo coming in, if you could aim at it.
Right.
And stuff like that. But that was my first real big experience after that, September the 15th.
So you see a ship that got torpedoed and is sinking, and you see basically the entire crew of the ship going overboard and in the water. And did you guys pick up some of those guys?
I think we picked up 400 guys that day.
And I'm just wondering, as you are witnessing the destruction of another ship, and your ship's already been hit once, and you're picking up guys. Well, you were hit at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
You're picking up guys from a sinking ship. Does it ever occur to you that that could happen to you someday, that you might find yourself in that position?
I told you, heck no. No, we thought we were invincible.
Uh-huh.
The fighting lady, oh, God.
Little did you know.
Next thing that I can remember is in October, the first battle at Cape Esperance, we opened up in a night battle. All these battles took place at night.
Sometimes like 1 or 2 in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Cape Esperance, we used our searchlights, which was a no-no. And then some of the guys up on the searchlight, we got hit in the stacks.
You said you turned the searchlights on, and maybe some people aren't connecting the dots. The reason that was a bad idea is... Now the Japanese know where you are.
Yeah, exposed yourself, see?
And then you guys got hit.
Yeah. The next battle, night engagement we were in was the Battle of Guadalcanal. It lasted for 3 days. We went in with a bunch of troop ships to land on Guadalcanal. That was in the afternoon. What I remember about, we got a warning that the Japanese Air Force was coming down from, I think, Munda or someplace up north. And so they took the troop ships and moved them out of the slot. And we just waited for them to come in. There was 13 of us ships that day. 5 cruisers and 8 destroyers, tin cans. When they came in, I think we shot down 32 of them, something like that. And I think we were credited with 5 of them. After that, we hung around because we heard the Japanese fleet was coming down that night. I don't know how many ships we fought against that night. And that's when the Atlanta and the Juno, the Atlanta got sunk. The Juno, which had the 5 Sullivan brothers on it, and the San Francisco got hit real bad. And we were on our way back to Espirito Santo after the battle, and we run into a nest of submarines, I guess it was. They fired, and I heard that the torpedo went by us and hit the Juno, and the Juno just disintegrated.
Uh-huh.
Part of the Juno, I understand, the hull flew through the air and hit the San Francisco. And I think our captain was reprimanded, is that the word, for not sticking around, which would have been stupid. He says, yeah, let's get the heck out of here, you know.
And you mentioned the Sullivan brothers. But so then, on the Juno, there were 5 of them. They all died.
That has
become a kind of a legendary thing in the armed forces. They named a ship after the Sullivan brothers, but they changed the policy.
Yeah, not to have too many brothers or relatives on the same ship.
Right.
I think our ship radioed, and they sent a search plane of, you know, Catalina flying boats, PBYs, back there to see what was still left.
And all this is happening, and you still think you're invincible?
Yes. I'm still here, aren't I?
Yes, you are. And you're in great shape for almost 95. Was there ever a point where that air of invincibility was rocked a little bit, where you started to think, you know, something like this could claim my life?
No. Honestly, no. I took it day by day, you might say.
Well, there is one day that I'm really going to have to ask you about, the day your ship was sunk and you had to survive in the water. When we come back, we'll go back to July 6th, 1943, and the Battle of Kula Gulf. Remember, you can find photos and video of this spirited 94-year-old at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this. Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting rvcountry.com.